So today I'm going to speak about some of the verses from the Dhammapada, which is the sayings of the Buddha. Again, looking at them from a Zen perspective, as I've been doing the last few talks, looking at the Buddha's teachings from the perspective of Zen. I wanted to kind of draw out some of the key ideas that the Buddha uses in the Dhammapada, and talk about how it relates to our practice and our lives. The first thing, the very beginning of the Dhammapada, very first few verses, he very clearly makes a statement that says that the activities of the mind, it's the activities of the mind that cause happiness or unhappiness with us. And so basically, it's not, as far as the Buddha is concerned, it's not the external world, but how we respond to the external world that makes us happy or unhappy. And that the activities of the mind, ultimately, we have responsibility for. It's not responsibility of someone else, it's not responsibility of what's outside us. We have responsibility for what goes on in our mind and how we respond. So what he speaks about is how negative mind states that emerge can trap you. And if you dwell on those negative mind states, then by staying with them, they become self-reinforcing and they go round and round and stay with you. He gives two examples. First of all, he speaks about anger. He speaks about how effectively if you relive the experience that made you anger, if you dwell with it, think about in the past that someone committed a wrong against you, if you dwell with it, then it reinforces it and it keeps your mind in a negative state, keeps you unhappy, etc. So effectively he's saying, when these things arise, let go. You might need to respond, you might need to act in the moment, but let go of the traces that they leave. Don't dwell on them. Do what's appropriate, but then step beyond it and step out of it, let it pass by. He also speaks later on in the Dhammapada about envy, how in the same way as anger is something we can dwell on, feeling that someone else has something that we don't have. It might be material goods, or it might be a life that we consider better, or we might think that they're better than us in some way. We might feel inferior to them. And again, he says that if we stay with those ideas, if we dwell on them, then they reinforce themselves. It creates circles in the mind that trap us and hold us and effectively pull us away from happiness and also going beyond happiness. And so we need to escape from these cycles that we create, is what he says. We mustn't get caught up in them. We must try to move beyond them. And he says that the way out of those cycles is by regular practice of meditation. That's what he says. He says that meditation is the way to move beyond these things. Meditation is what allows one to observe these cycles and allows one to break these cycles when they start to arise. It allows you to notice and allows you to come away from them. In your meditational practice, when thoughts arise, you can notice the kind of patterns that come up, things that maybe you dwelled on in the past. And also in everyday life, it gives you the power to notice what arises over time. So he says that meditation is the way out. He uses the phrase that we must make the mind pure and disciplined, is what he uses. And from a Zen point of view, the way we interpret this is the discipline of awareness. It doesn't mean trying to force your mind to be different from how it is, but by observing the mind how it is, then the mind will naturally transform itself, naturally, unconsciously, and automatically. So you don't need to, from a Zen point of view, you don't need to try to think happy thoughts, or try to suppress the anger in some way. But what it says is that if you notice it, and then from a Zen point of view, if you notice the things that are going on within you, and then return to the body and the breath, then those things no longer have the power. So rather than trying to actively create different patterns from a Zen point of view. What we do is we observe the negative patterns, and by observing them and being present, then those negative patterns lose the power that they used to have over us. And so that's our practice, always being present. Of course we get pulled away, but always coming back, seeing the negative patterns that arise within us, and letting go of them. Let them. So our teacher Nancy, who founded this dojo, she used to say that it's about wearing out your karma. It's, you don't fight against your karma, but rather by through the act of meditation, then these patterns, these karmic patterns within us, get worn away over time, and new, more positive patterns naturally arise without us having to force them. The other thing that the Buddha says is that, and this was quite radical at the time that he was teaching, we don't look to some higher authority to save us. We don't look to the, he was talking about the Indian gods, we don't look them to them to save us, that ultimately it is ourselves that must make the effort, it's ourselves that must save us from these states of mind. And so he says that your attitude towards teachers is not that we that we must see the teachers as people who can help point the way, but they can't do the work for us. So it's not like guru devotion, maybe in some traditions. It's we don't see the there's not that kind of element of placing all your trust in the teacher, but rather you see the teacher as a guide who can help you see the negative things on the path and step around them. But ultimately, it's you that must make those acts. You must walk the path yourself. It's not someone else can't tell you exactly how to take those steps. Only you can take the steps for yourself. So others can only point the way, and that's the role of the teacher. The other thing he says is that, well, he says many, many things in the Dhammapada. Another thing I'd like to pull out from that is that little actions have a big effect, because little actions reinforce the patterns or step outside the patterns. He says that he used the image of doing poor deeds, inappropriate deeds, or doing beneficial deeds. A small deed is just like a drop of water, but over time those drops of water fill up the cup. And if you get used to doing small acts which aren't good, then you will very slowly but surely fill up that cup. So you need to notice when that's happening. And similarly, just small acts of goodness can fill up the cup. Small acts of compassion for others, small acts of awareness of others, and awareness of ourselves can fill that cup up. And so what he says is that it's these small acts which are important. You don't have to do some great big act of positiveness, but small acts over time make the difference. And the reason is because they create new patterns in the mind. They create new habits. If you get used to noticing when you make a mistake, when you do a small act which causes harm to another, it might be maybe criticizing or telling a lie or getting angry, which causes some harm to someone else. If you notice that, then it creates new patterns where the actions that you do tend to be more beneficial. And that helps the others around you, but it also helps yourself, because there's less conflict around you, there's less struggle around you. And so naturally, unconsciously and automatically, the environment in which you're in, the environment which you create, becomes a more positive one and more supportive of happiness and practice. The other thing I'd say is that he talks about good and bad. He talks about from an ethical point of view. He says that we should move away from those actions which cause suffering to others and to ourselves, those bad actions, and move towards good actions, actions which promote happiness, promote positivity, etc. But ultimately, he says that that is not what's essential in practice. He says that we must go beyond this, what he talks about, beyond merit and demerit, is what he says. We must transcend merit and demerit. So we mustn't be doing good actions. So if you're going to do if you're going to act, it's better to do stuff which promotes harmony, kindness, etc., than stuff which promotes conflict. That's clear, and he's very clear in that. But he says that we need to go beyond the idea of doing good. If you are attached to the idea of doing good, if you're attached to doing good actions, then that attachment is still a trap. And the idea of doing good can catch you in the same way that anger can catch you, in a more subtle way in some ways, but still can catch you. And so he says that we need to step beyond that. We need to step beyond that. We need to let go of the idea of doing good and the desire for ourselves to be a great person or a good person. And I spoke before about Jean Babi, one of our teachers here, who used to talk about the demon of good, which is where our belief about how things should be and trying to impose our belief about how things should be on other people can cause suffering. So we need to step beyond the idea of good, step beyond the idea of doing good. Even though we still do good in our actions, we should not be attached to doing good. We should simply observe and be aware of the actions we take and promote harmony without clinging desperately to trying to be nice, trying to be harmonious, etc. And then finally, I want to just pick out one more phrase from the Dhammapada. The key thing that he said, which is very core to the Zen tradition, is that speaking about the teachings without practicing is like a flower without perfume, is the image he uses. And so it's essential that we practice, that we don't just talk about these things. It's essential that we practice. And so I'll finish there and we'll carry on practicing.